Welcome to Crosstalk. My name is Irene. I am here from South Florida. This is Crosstalk, the number one, best, most wonderful podcast in the entire galaxy universe, says me. And I'm here today with an incredible message and story of hope. And don't forget to like, follow, and comment. We would love your feedback. If you need help, please reach out. We that's the whole point. We want to help you. And today I have Teresa here, and I'm so excited to introduce Teresa.
Oh, so glad to be here, Irene. Good to see you.
Where did it begin? Like, how was childhood like?
Childhood was great. Childhood was great. It was great. I didn't know.
Are you from New York?
I'm from Staten Island, New York.
No.
Can you tell?
No, I can't tell.
I like my coffee.
Yeah.
No, it's, I had a great childhood. It was, I'm one of three siblings. I'm one of four. I have an older brother and a younger sister and a younger brother. And it was really, really terrific. You know, we grew up lower middle class in a middle class neighborhood. And if up and until maybe 16, 17 years old, if I had a thought of lack, I don't remember it. I just don't. I remember love. I remember kindness. I remember reprimands, well-deserved, by the way, even though I didn't think so at the time. You know, I remember sibling rivalries. I was the cheerleader. I ran track. I played volleyball, and my sister was always at my side, my big cheerleader. My parents drove us everywhere that we needed to go. It was a really good upbringing, in my humble opinion. Maybe as I started to hit my late teens, I felt an embarrassment being of the lower middle class at that point, of not having a nice house and three of us in one bedroom. You know, I started to develop feelings based on what I was seeing out in society at that point. Because now between grade school and high school, you know, I was in an arena of more affluent families, that maybe the houses were more orderly and bigger. And
so you thought.
So I thought.
Right.
So I thought the tangible visual things that I could see started to influence me a little bit on what I felt, and, you know, more so what I wanted going forward. You know, it impacted me. Mm. It impacted me. But I still was this beautiful sunshine of a woman. I will never forget that woman, because I don't want to forget the light that alcohol dimmed and almost snuffed out. So I had a great childhood. My parents were really cool. They were fun. I loved their relationship. They seemed madly in love. I did grow up in a generation where if there was a problem going on, I didn't hear about it. None of us heard about it.
Right.
It happened behind closed doors or when we weren't around. But I had a good, I loved my cousins. I loved visiting. I love aunts and uncles. It was great. I had a great childhood.
Okay,
I really
that
did.
That sounds good. That's
yes.
Not all the stories we hear.
Exactly.
So that's nice.
Yes.
And so then what did you go away to school?
Nope.
Did you stay in New York?
Yep. I bailed out and went to work on Wall Street. And I guess I found that first God, which was money. The first God, which was money. And
how old were you when you got the job on Wall
18.
Street? Okay. And what was this job?
I worked for a broker.
So as a secretary?
Yeah. They called them sales assistants back then.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. We were sales assistants. And even a great guy, a very, very young, successful broker. And, you know, part of the salary was getting bonuses from them as a participant in keeping their business up and running.
So what did that look like? Were you, you know, flaunting money up and down New York, drinking bar, going to bars, drinking, or was it more a quieter disease for you?
No, it included that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it included that.
So how did it all begin? Do you remember your first drink?
I do. My first drink, I was 12 years old, and I had, my mom and dad were having a little neighborhood get together. And I actually remember it like it was yesterday. I see it. I see me at 12 years old. I see me pouring one of the adults a glass of wine. Amazing. I see me pouring myself a glass of wine, pure curiosity.
And did they realize you were doing that?
No, pure curiosity.
Okay. And so then that's 12.
I got sick to my stomach because it didn't stop at that one drink.
Okay. So did you drink in high school? Did you drink in middle school?
No.
Okay. So it did. It you didn't go like straight into a drinking
career. My 12-year-old experience and the hangover I got from sneaking that out of pure curiosity, I wish it would have been enough. But the same curiosity coupled with a little bit of peer pressure happened again when I was 14.
Okay.
And that was around the skating rink on Staten Island in Clove Lakes. And somebody got a bottle of Boone's Farm strawberry wine and we passed the bottle around.
Strawberry wine.
I don't remember the taste, but I do remember, again, the horrible hangover the next day. And, you know, in hindsight, my first drink was I was a brunt of jokes within the family because of the experience that I had, the hangover.
So they knew you had drank.
They knew. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Oh,
you kind of woke up with No,
they knew the night of because of the vomiting.
Oh.
They knew the night of having to. My dad. I remember my dad had to pick me up. And, all I remember is him. Now, my dad was 6'5" and 250 pounds. He wore a 15 shoe. He was
so
huge.
Petite.
Exactly. And I remember him holding me up against the bathroom wall with the shower, the cold water coming down on me. I guess in an effort to kind of jolt me. I don't know the purpose of that, but
probably wake you up a little.
Wake me up a little bit, start the process of coming off this horrible, horrible drunk that I had had. I grew up with drinking being, it's sociable. It's, mm-hmm. It was an, not getting drunk and falling over the tables and,
right.
And ending up in the bushes. But I was around a lot of drinking parties with my families and my aunts and my uncles and my older cousins. And, you know, in hindsight, I do see, a couple of them that I could qualify as being alcoholically inclined, but not back in those days. They just looked like a bunch of adults having fun.
Right.
To me. And that's where the curiosity was born. But after 14, I didn't take another drink until I became legal, which was 18 back in those days.
Okay, and so you're working on Wall Street, and here comes round two.
Round two.
Was it as bad as round one?
No, mine was slow. It was progressive.
As it always is.
As it always is.
Yeah. So what did it start to look like? Was it just normal at first, socializing, going out with friends?
I'm speaking hindsight now because it was really nothing normal. You know, I think alcoholically speaking, as an alcoholic, I leaned toward a connecting and establishing relationships with people who drank. They were not necessarily alcoholic, but they were up for the Friday night happy hour, which for them was having a couple of drinks with a coworker and going home and resuming life. For me, it was on to the next bar. I was always running for the last ferry out of New York City. I was always running for the last ferry. It was the one or two was never enough.
Right.
And it escalated over the course of the years. You know, I'm maybe 20, 21. It was just the Friday nights at that point. And I was a weekend warrior. Mm-hmm. I was definitely a weekend warrior. That was fun. No matter what we did, who has the cooler? Do we have what we need to enjoy? You know, we didn't have to eat. Someone could forget the hamburgers, but God forbid they forget the vodka.
Yeah.
All hell broke loose.
Right.
So it was just, there was a certain degree of normalcy to it. And I recall wondering if it was ever going to stop, like if I'd ever resume what I felt was normal. But I just didn't pay mind to it. Mm. I kind of dismissed those questioning thoughts. Like, is this really normal?
Right.
And I just allowed myself to conform to the normalcy instead of actually trying to change what I perceived as normal.
Right.
And alcoholically speaking, it progressed. With each passing year, with each, you know, I do it in decades. Because there's so much that goes on in between those decades that it would take really that long to explain it.
Of course.
And I think we all understand that. And so many bad decisions, so many bad choices.
Can you highlight maybe, you know, in your 20s, like three worst events, in your 30s, three worst events kind of till you get sober?
So I guess I'll do,
otherwise we'll do the Teresa show and just, you know, forget crosstalk.
No, you know what? It was more based, I didn't have the consequences that a lot of people have. I call them the tangibles, the, you know, the DUIs, legal problems, family abandonment or backing off or even friends backing off. I didn't have those. At the end, it gets a little bit different, but in the beginning, it was really like a lot of just really bad ideas and bad choices. I'd say in my 20s at this point, getting involved with the broker that I was working for. And yes, it was a nice 4-year relationship, but I had the white picket fence and the mansion and it didn't work out that way. Mm. And 4 years later, I was ill-equipped because of my drinking and not and my alcoholic nature of handling his dismissal of me. Mm. So I had a very difficult time and it wasn't very pretty with the verbalization, the anger tantrums, sneaking into his apartment building in New York City. Manipulating the guard that I had known. It's like, hey, walking in, I had no right being there, you know, and pounding and screaming on his door because I thought there was another girl in there.
Right.
You know, I regret those things. You know, I was not prepared emotionally for the rejection. Getting into a relationship right after that for the wrong reasons. Really not. I brought more harm to the gentleman that I pursued in relationships than they brought me.
Right.
Because I was not of sound mind and I was nowhere near emotionally equipped to understand what love might have been.
So you would pick fights? I mean, I'm comparing like...
Nothing along that line. It was just I'd steal from them. I'd lie to them. I was after New York... I got married in all of this. And that was in my 30s. Don't regret getting married. Wrong choice.
Right. Wrong guy.
Wrong guy. Really nice guy. You know, nothing about him. It was about me.
Right.
My inability to have a relationship. It was, and then the screaming, the yelling, and the physical came much later. No, they can't bother me.
Okay. There's two dogs underneath Teresa right now bothering her. So she's not, you know, she doesn't have a tick or anything like that.
They're angels sent to me just to keep me on track. That's all.
They love you too.
They're really, really good dogs. Just a lot of really bad choices, bad decisions. I remember, and I'm jumping around.
That's okay.
Miami. I'm in my 30s. We moved down to Miami Beach.
Is this when you're married?
This is married, yeah. Mm-hmm. This is in the mid-90s. And The drinking had escalated, and it's now no longer just the Friday night, and it's not the weekend warrior. It's Monday through Friday, and not intoxicated and inebriated every single night, but I'm drinking every day.
Right. And is it like wine after work, or is it vodka?
Variety, you know.
Not that.
It does matter, though, because I still wonder, because most of my adult life, I drank Bacardi and club soda.
Oh, wow.
Most of my adult life. At some particular point, it shifted into, there was this beautiful dark rum I was introduced to called Bregal. And I started drinking
that
on the rocks. Mm. Real smooth. I have had my fair share of the most expensive bottles of champagne and wine due to my relationship with the broker.
Right.
That I chugged with a straw and had no appreciation for.
Oh my God. My friend chef would
he's curling.
I think he would curl.
He's curling. His back is going up. When I think about
that's how we drank.
That's how we drank.
Yeah.
That's how we drank.
That's
it. And that's and sometimes it even came with like the want side, you know, and the lack and being limited, these feelings that are like my core human. I don't like calling them defects, and I don't like to call them shortcomings, but I like to call them are my emotional liabilities.
Okay, which is how it was originally.
They're my emotional liabilities. Yeah. They're people, places, and things, and institutions, and events in my life that through my thinking create an uncomfortable emotion, which are my emotional liabilities. And then I go to the assets.
Right. So you moved from New York to Miami.
Yep.
And it's getting progressively worse, it sounds.
Progressively. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you end up having any kids with him?
No.
Okay.
No. No children.
How does that relationship... Well, I'm assuming it ends.
It does end. It does end.
And sorry if that's a rude assumption, but no. Just the way you phrased it from the beginning.
No.
But so tell me, what happened? Why?
You know, it's all a direct result of my alcoholism, my thinking. And it's not the alcohol, the drinking aspect of it. It's the thinking aspect of it. And he was the longest. Lou was the longest one that I had a relationship with. A lot of 4 years, a lot of 5 years, and he was a total of 9 years together. But all of the relationships that I had with men up and until that point ended with always included dishonesty and cheating.
On your part?
On my part. I was the cheater. I was the cheater. And just seemed like I was always looking for something more.
But did you feel justified in some ways?
No.
No. You knew. You didn't care.
I knew. I didn't care.
Okay.
I didn't care. And it was feeding something that I couldn't pinpoint back then. I see today it is the nature of my alcoholism. I understand that today, which helps me not shut the door on my past and not have regret over it. But it still existed.
Right.
I see it. You know, you have this nice gentleman, a hardworking guy. All right, maybe not exactly what I thought a relationship would be, which would mean doing everything I want him to do, when I want him to, and how I want him to do it. That's not how relationships work.
No?
No.
Oh, wow.
No. No. No.
That's how I was, too. It was my way or the highway kind of thing.
And I'd start looking. Mm-hmm. I would start looking. That was a lot of what my alcoholism looked like until the bitter end.
Wow.
And then I joined the category of most people who start to go in that despairing and hopeless, challenging emotional world that many of us face when we get to the end.
I to me, those are the memories that I try to keep in the forefront.
Same here.
So tell me a little bit about what that looked like for you.
I never know when my end was. I always try to pinpoint when that end started. And just for convenience sake, I try to put it in about 5 years before.
So 2000?
Maybe 2000, you know, where, no, even though I got sober in 2007, so it'd be like 2002,
okay.
2003, where the drinking had escalated to, like not just every day, but most of the day.
So it's no longer like wait till after work or at a civilized hour, which doesn't really matter at that point.
No.
But now it's breakfast?
Not just yet, but it was the beginning of the end. Okay. Yeah, breakfast came more about 2 years before I got sober, and severely the 6 or 7 months before I got sober.
Yeah.
But I can, you know, it's like a slow motion reel that I allow to play in my mind up on the projector of my life, that just watching it all happen in front of me and never knowing. I didn't know. Mm. All these, you know, what started off as silly and unnecessary choices and decisions, and ultimately continually fueled by the alcoholism. It was like the devil kept throwing more fire, more wood into the fire.
Yeah.
And the blaze was just getting bigger and bigger till it just got out of control.
Did you feel like you were doing something wrong? Was there any, you started to have that kind of like, I probably shouldn't be doing this.
No, it was there. It was there. Which makes
it even worse.
Maybe 10 years before.
Oh, wow.
I got sober when I was 48. So maybe about 38-ish or so. There was, you know, come on, Irene, at this particular point, the bad choices in men, the financial disaster, credit card debt up the kazoo, not paying my taxes, you know, a couple of car accidents, a couple of repossessions, not paying due to not paying the insurance and therefore losing the registration. Really bad life choices.
So, you know, it's looking gruesome at the end. You know, you're just, as I call, living in the darkness.
I'm a shell of a woman. That butterfly's wings have been clipped. Mm. It's clipped.
And so this guy that you're with says, go to these meetings?
Well, that was several years before. That was the summer of 2004.
Right. I want to hear about those years between 2004 and 2007.
So 2004, 2007. So
why you thought maybe you didn't need to, you know.
Because it was I was looking externally and not internally. Mm. And even though I thought I had a problem with drinking, I thought it was more my circumstances creating that desire for the drink and not that it was actually the fact that I had lost control of drinking.
Right.
I couldn't have that one. It was never one. So the relationship turned disastrous. It was the first time in my life I started to become violent. It was not his fault. No, he was not a good match for me. He was a horrible person. I remember I met him on U-Date. I met him on U-Date, and I had met two guys on U-Date that I had liked, that I had a preference for. This guy, I'll call him Steve, who lived in Sarasota, or this guy, let's say Rich, who lived in Miami Beach by me. Now, Rich was the one I should have picked, but Steve was the one I picked because I was a reasonably tall person. He was short. So right off the bat, my ego and pride, I'm candy. He appeared to me as having money. All the things that I shouldn't have been attracted to, I was attracting to. That's what I was. I could fix him. He was a little bit anal. And in my opinion, really serious OCD person. Not somebody that I should try to want to fix. Because that's a medical condition, and I'm not equipped to help a medical condition. I know that now.
Right, of course.
I don't know that then. Now this is a fixing opportunity. Got me the car.
Because you didn't need fixing.
Exactly.
Let's not look internally.
And as it ended up, he was actually sober for 5 or 6 years, which he did not share.
Right.
Had been exposed to the rooms. Claimed a spiritual being, but was not. So I remember my girlfriend asking me, why are you doing this? And I said, well, he doesn't drink. Maybe I'll slow down. That was about the only reason I could come up with. And those were these really, like, I gave everything away from my quaint little apartment in Miami Beach. You know, the marriage was over. I was single for a couple of years. I went on the U date. I gave things away.
So you actually, like, moved to Sarasota?
I moved to Sarasota.
Had you been on a few dates with him?
One or two.
Okay. Oh, wow. So yeah. You really...
Yeah. Yeah. And those are the foolish decisions. Oh, yeah. Oh. Straight over.
Oh.
Yeah. Bad decisions.
I mean,
wrong decisions. It's just the, you know, it's, those are the things that I reflect on more as a proof of my alcoholic nature, the thinking, than I do than the actual consumption of alcohol.
Right.
It got there.
Right. So you move in with him, and obviously, I mean, you just said he was sober for 4 or 5 years, and he was okay with you drinking or no?
Yeah, initially.
Okay.
I was on my best behavior.
Right.
Which came to a screeching halt, and I mean, I feel bad for the guy. What he must have said, what did I get myself into? And there were a lot of things wrong with him. Please don't get me wrong. There was an emotional imbalance to this gentleman. But like most things that I got myself into, I didn't know how to get out. Mm. I didn't know how to say, this isn't right for me. I'm going back. There was nothing to go back to. And there were friends. There were many people that would have helped me out. Pride and ego.
Of course.
You know, there
conceding.
Was... it was such a bad decision. And it just gets chalked into my visual alcoholic comic column that I have in my head because they were bad choices. Mm-hmm. Really bad choices stemming from an emotional instability that I wasn't aware that I had because I was the alcoholic. Right. I was an undiagnosed alcoholic. Mm. There's no doubt in my mind that I have that, the medical description of...
Yeah, the disease.
Of disease of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, that I agree, I do. Too.
I do. And it's my stick that I keep steady, that when I want to think that, no, maybe I'm not, which I very rarely think, I can tell you that right now.
Right.
I am fully conceited that I am. It is my rod. That kind of makes me remember. Mm-hmm. I have not made those type of decisions since I got sober.
Right.
I made a couple of bad choices in my beginning of my sobriety, but I wasn't even remotely close to the level of maturity of a relationship with a higher power that I don't regret. And moved in with my mom. Mm. Now, I understand that there are many beautiful people out there that do move back in with their parents in an effort to maybe make it easier for them or help them. I took that as the pretense. I let everybody believe that I was that wonderful daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple fact was I was taking the easy way out. And for a daughter who absolutely adored her mother for most of her adult life, I broke her heart.
Did you take advantage?
I took total advantage of her. Total advantage of my mother. I broke her heart. Now, that's in my family. Just a brief explanation. At 23 years old, I lost my father, who was 57, from a massive heart attack.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was all right. It was all right. And it is all right. 6 months later, I lose my grandma, his mom. To her frailties of just being an older person back in those days. And that broke my heart. Loved that woman, my only grandparent, and I adored her. So fast forward to the winter of 2026, My mom gets diagnosed.
No, 2006.
2006. Thank you. I wasn't there. No, I'm a fortune teller. I can see ahead. I forgot to tell you that.
We just started the medium portion of the episode.
Exactly. So, November of 2006. My mom's diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Ooh,
and she dies December 5th of 2006. And then 6 months later, because I have remarried from Mr. Sarasota Man, I have now married Mr. Boca Man, who is wonderful. But
You married the Sarasota Man?
No.
Oh, okay.
I left him
and
married Mr. Boca Man, who was the bus driver.
Okay.
He dies of his cancer.
Oh, God.
So my...
Right after you marry him.
My intimate deaths are 6 months apart. Dad and grandma.
Oh, wow.
Mom and my husband.
Okay.
Meeting Alan and engaging with the dating and everything, it subsided a little bit.
Right, right, right.
You know, it's... And this is the end. You know, it's almost like the calm before the storm.
Right.
With alcoholism.
Right.
You know, there was it got bad, but there was a brief calm.
Okay.
And it wasn't because of the debts. The reason why I walked into an AA meeting on January 26th of 2007 was I promised Alan, my deceased husband, that I would take care of myself once he left. But I wasn't doing anything until he went to heaven. Because it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know when, but we knew it was coming. And he went to heaven on July 18th of 2007, which was a Wednesday afternoon. And I went back to the AA meeting on July 26th of 2007. And my last white chip was September 25th of 2007. And those 2 months, those 60 days, were pretty dark.
No good.
No good.
Oh, God.
No good. No good.
But you deserved to drink because you just lost your husband.
Oh, a whole bunch of reasons.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of reasons.
Yeah.
It was the thinking. Bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, in the end, really, the only truly bad choice, everything else ended up being a life experience for me and contributes to the storybook of my life. They're all chapters that thankfully can come to an end so I can begin another chapter.
Mm-hmm.
The drinking was it was just a mad rush of all the mistakes I had made.
It was like a solution.
It was just the solution for all of it.
Right.
For all of it. I ended up in treatment.
That's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, so I did do a stint in treatment.
Literally, my question was going to be, it sounds like you just went to AA, but...
Nope.
Okay, so it was, so when, in August 2007?
No, I went into treatment and the only reason why September 25th of 2007 is actually my sobriety date was because I had gotten the call I went to Wayside House.
Oh, that's right. I do know this.
Yes. I went to Wayside House.
Yes.
And I had not drank when they called me yet.
Oh, okay.
And she said, we have a bed for you.
How did she know to call you?
Because I had been going to the back door and knocking on the door for the last 30 days, 40 days, saying, I'm Teresa, I want a bed.
Oh, wow.
That's what I was instructed to do.
So you were trying to, you knew you needed help.
No. Oh. I just didn't know what else to do.
Oh.
I was more or less following a suggestion.
Oh, well, I mean,
it worked out in my benefit.
Yeah.
But the last thing I wanted to do was go to treatment.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it. So now we hug.
Okay.